Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 81. Dave, a full flight in the Combine as we wrap things up today. It's Tuesday, February 28th. The DBs go today. More interestingly, I guess, in terms of what happened over the weekend is we didn't get the salary cap number. There was a pretty strong perception that that number was going to come out sometime over the weekend, and teams could then go forward knowing kind of the cap restrictions that they were going to operate under. Obviously, this has big impact on the Steelers in terms of what they're going to do with some of their veterans, and certainly the story that has been front and center and just is the dog that won't die, the story with Mike Wallace, as they have until March 5th or March 6th, whichever the date is, to make a decision whether they are going to put a first-round tender on him and pay him $2.7 million and see if anybody comes in and offers him an offer sheet and the Steelers have the opportunity to match. Or, of course, they could put the franchise tag on him, which would be $9.4 million, all of which needs to be sorted out by this early date in March. And then, of course, we've talked kind of ad nauseum about the Steelers and everybody else in the NFL needing to be cap compliant by mid-March on the Rule of 51 number.
Yeah, to start with, whether or not you believe the report by Mike Florio this morning on Pro Football Talk, there's some talks, it seems, it's, you know, and it's hard to believe that they don't have this number yet, but I guess it's possible that they don't. But they are reporting that this number could actually come in lower than expected. So they're throwing out there that the number had been expected to be $120 million or so per team. Now, you have to keep in mind, you got the $1.5 million credits from the CBA that you can borrow from the future years that you can use. So, you know, if you took $120 million and added that 1.5 to it, you're sitting at 121.5. This is the first time I've heard that it could be that low. So I think a lot of what you're seeing too is why there's nothing going on. I know Ramon Foster tweeted last night he had still not received his restricted tender offer, and I checked around the rest of the league too, and it seems like there're not a lot of restricted tenders being handed out. And I think it's because they want to get a firm number on what this cap number is, and then you'll start seeing a flurry of the moves, such as the Steelers in terminating a few contracts, possibly signing Wallace to a long-term deal, and of course handing out your restricted tenders. But that's why there's been really no movement in this last week or so, and on top of it, you got to remember the NFL Combine's going on.
Slightly odd, I think, Dave, the slightly odd that they have given Jeremy Kapanos his restricted tender, and yet we've heard nothing about Foster or Redmond or who are the other guys with the in Kapanos' situation?
Well, the exclusive tenders have been handed out.
That's what I meant, the exclusive tender. We've heard that Kapanos got his.
And Redmond got his, and Steve McClendon got his as well. So the three.
They did. Okay, I hadn't seen that. All right. Good to bring us up to speed.
The three exclusive tenders have been handed out. So what we're waiting on is the restricted tenders now.
Right. And, of course, as you said, you just want to know the parameters you're dealing with, because if you know, for some unforeseen reason, that number comes in $5 million lower, you know, you don't want to be hamstrung into a situation where you've given a guy a contract and that's not what you want to do, because once he signs that restricted tender, you're on the hook for it. Of course, if it comes in $5 million higher, everybody's going to feel like it's Christmas morning and they've got money to go out and spend and shop for free agents or whatever else, make sure they get their own free agents signed. So, you know, again, these stories are going through. We talked about what's been going on ESPN.com, another article yesterday about how the Steelers are in bad cap shape this year. And then they go on to say that, you know, they are going to be in bad cap shape next year, even if it goes up $10 million. Maybe they'll be able to do something, but they'll be much worse off than any team in the NFL. I've taken shots at these guys on Twitter. A lot of it's based on the fantastic work that you've done on SteelersDepot.com. But the point of the matter is, no matter what happens, the Steelers have a lot of room this year if they want to make some personnel moves, or they're going to be up against the cap. But if they keep these names on the roster this year, they are going to have tons of money rolling off in terms of salary cap next year. When you talk about guys like Ferrier, Foote, Ward, Kimoatu, Hampton, they're going to come off the 1 year or the next. I mean, these guys are not going to be Steelers 3 years, 2 years from now. So it's interesting to hear the talk. And I just, my assumption is for some of the bigger picture guys, it's when you got to cover 32 NFL teams, it's really hard to dig in and really have a good understanding of 32 NFL teams roster and their exact cap situation. So, my man Brandt,
Andrew Brandt.
Andrew Brandt, who I think is generally very good, I think is a little off the mark on this one in terms of what he's talking about the Steelers' long-term cap situation. And as everybody has pointed out, with the 2013 situation, with the 2014 situation, with the new television contracts kicking in, there's certainly going to be a much bigger pie to work from. So really, I think, and I think you'll agree with me, that the job that Khan and Colbert have done this year has alleviated much of the tension, and we still haven't, I think they're only 75% of the way done. There's more work to be done.
Absolutely, and I respect Andrew Brandt, too. I think he does a great job with what he does, and he definitely has the background to stand behind it, too. I just think some of these fears are a little bit overblown. I know Jamison Hensley from ESPN kind of picked up on Brandt and kind of reported on that. But, I did a post not too long ago about this, about how bad off are these restructured contracts hurting the Steelers. And really, when you start looking at the guys on the roster and all like that, and I even factored in, being as Chris Kimoatu and Hines Ward are currently on the roster still, and they're part of that payroll as well, too. When you start putting all the pieces of the puzzle together, yeah, they're going to be over the cap. But as you said, there's a couple of these guys that are going to be coming off as well. And when you factor in that hopefully, if the reports are true, that it's going to be about a $10 million increase in 2013, what I was trying to get at the article there is they're not going to be as bad off as they were facing this offseason with the cap, in my firm belief, because, the rookie, there's a rookie salary cap, now basically a minimum, that they sign these guys to, so you don't have these exorbitant contracts. And I just don't think it's going to be as bad in my early projections as what they're trying to make it out to be for the Steelers in 2013.
Right. So, I feel like we've hit this pretty hard, and we'll hit it some more as we get some more information. I would imagine there's very little chance we won't know the number by Friday. So we can delve into kind of the exact ramifications. And, of course, the Steelers will then be making some more personnel moves. But as we expected, a little less in terms of the personnel this week, since we spoke on Friday, because of the combine going on in Indianapolis. Lots of interesting stuff. We talked a little bit about the quarterbacks on Friday. I think people have been very impressed by Andrew Luck's athleticism, very impressed by RG3's height, and just his general presence, his charisma, his understanding of the game. Both these guys have only, kind of went into the situation this weekend as being the pretty firm number one and number two picks. And if you can actually enhance your standing, it seems like they both did it. So those are going to be the one and two guys. The Rams have said they're definitely going to move the pick, so we'll see where that goes. But more interestingly, from a Steeler perspective, we've seen some of the offensive line stuff. Yesterday, you were tweeting about the defensive linemen and the linebackers. We'll have the DBs today. But certainly the thing that maybe jumped out the most for Steeler fans is just how Dontari Poe crushed it at the combine.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, if there's anybody who really probably solidified his first round status for sure. And don't get me wrong. Now, a lot of people say we put too much stock in these numbers. A lot of people say, that they are what they are, and people already know this. And look, what the combine is it confirms to teams what they have seen on tape. If they see something out of the ordinary that they don't think matches up, well, then they go back and look at the tape again. So that's pretty much what the combine is used for. But when you get to Dontari Poe, you're talking about a guy 6'3" and a half, 346 pounds, who ran a 4.98 40 time you know, on yesterday. He put up 44 reps of 225 on the bench, 29.5 vertical, 8.9 broad jump, and a real nice 4.56 20-yard shuttle, and his, let's see, what was his three cone? 7.90. So all those things point to this guy, measurable-wise, you know, being what he is. I mean, what he's supposed to be. And the big thing we didn't know about him, because he was a junior, we did not see him in a Senior Bowl and all like that. And there's really not a lot of tape for guys like me to look at. I went on ESPN3. I have access to that. There's a Middle Tennessee State game in there. You know, and people will like to overreact from these things too. And, you know, the big buzz this morning is how Don Terry Poe has jumped out of reach for the Steelers and all. And let's remember, this is the end of February here. They still have pro days to go through. There's also 31 teams in the NFL that have different needs than a defensive tackle. So keep that in mind. He did solidify his first round status, I think, but I'm not willing to say, hey, this guy's out of reach for the Steelers all the way around.
Yeah, I just feel like he's not going to be around at 24. There was some talk yesterday of Kansas City at 11 taking a look at him, the Eagles at 15. 24 is a long way from 11 and 15. Just you have the scheme issues, and that's something that may work in the Steelers' favor. And look, as somebody pointed out on Twitter yesterday, there are now 40 certain first rounders and 100 certain top two rounders. And there aren't 40 first round picks, and there are not 100 picks in the first two rounds. So by definition, some of these guys are going to slide. And Dave, we saw somebody slide hard yesterday.
I guess you're talking about the linebacker
from Arizona State, Vontae.
Right. That kid, I have not been high on that kid. If you follow me on Twitter and seen my comments from people kind of kibitzing on that and asking me what I thought about this kid, everybody's in love with his nastiness, I think, more than anything, trying to relate him to a James Harrison type, that would play inside. But this kid ran a 5.09 40 time. Are you kidding me? You think you're a first round material and you don't have the speed to go along with that. His broad jump, even though, you know, I don't want to put a lot of emphasis on these numbers, but 8.8 when everybody else is jumping 9 feet and all like that, that tells you that there's something wrong there. Maybe the kid didn't put in the work, a training leading up to the combine.
Well, it certainly looks like that. And with the attitude issues and everything, how do you say his last name? Bickford?
Burfset. Yeah, I have a problem with that. I have an excuse, though. I have a Southern Catholic. I have
he got crushed on Twitter. One guy said he felt he might even fall out of the draft. Now, there are guys who had him coming in as kind of one of the top three linebackers coming into the draft. He's unlikely to fall out of the draft, but really his numbers were startlingly unimpressive. He'll get another shot at his pro day, but man, tough stuff. You just figure if you're not ready, you don't do it at the combine. And I hate to say he embarrassed himself, but this is being unprepared for your interview.
And he didn't lift, okay, and he didn't run the 20 shuttle. He didn't run the three cone after that. It just shows that you're right. What he probably should have done, if he knew he wasn't ready, or if his advisors didn't know knew he wasn't ready, they should have said, hey, you just need to hold off to your pro day. It didn't help either. Some of his quotes he had at media day, kind of taking shots at his college coaches and all like that as well too. The way he was used and all like that. And this guy already had a bad attitude, took some bad penalties for Arizona State as well, too. So, yeah, this guy really, really hurt himself.
How about, Dave, there's an article that Pat Kerwin wrote on the CBS.com website about David DeCastro. And you've talked about David DeCastro for, 2 months now from the end of the season, bowl game Stanford played, then through the All-Star games. He was used, as my understanding is, he was used as the example in just about every drill they did for the offensive linemen. Why don't you just kind of recap that for our listeners?
First of all, I hold Pat Curran in high regard. I really love his work on Sirius XM radio. That's a Moving the Chains is one of the best shows to listen to. And he just recently started writing, moved over from NFL.com to CBS Sports writing. He's got a great article up on DeCastro and how he's going to be fighting an uphill battle to hold his spot in the top 32, even Kerwin suggests. And, you know, he goes back, he talked to some coaches, I think, on a plane ride and all like that. The article breaks it down real good. And DeCastro is another guy that ran slow at the combine, a 5.43. But he did an interesting thing that I got out of the article. I never have heard this as far as using some combine stats before. Kerwin likes to have what he calls an explosiveness score, where he takes the vertical leap number, he adds it to the standing broad jump number, and then adds that to the bench press number. And he likes to add those three scores up to give what's called an explosive number. And DeCastro, when you add all of his three numbers up, they come up to 72, which is very impressive for an offensive lineman that Kerwin points out there. But he goes back and looks at the tape and all like that again and basically said this is a guy that kind of overextends himself sometimes, and he even noted in one game that he looked at that he's on the ground six times and from being kind of an overaggressive, being over aggressive and all like that. So DeCastro is going in the first round. He's one of the few interior linemen that should go in the first round. But, you know, is he going to drop out at top 15, top 20, kind of like Kerwin is suggesting? Now, I don't think he drops out of the first round, but I think he could drop in the first round because of just being an interior guy. Another thing that kind of made me feel good maybe about what I'm seeing on tape is he also says you know, the next pressure from DeCastro, maybe his toughest at all, comes from the fact that guards like Cordy Glenn, Brandon Washington, and Kevin Zeitler should be solid picks in the second round. So what I got out of that is that he thinks that Cordy Glenn could fall down into the second round too. And I think I told you on your you sat in on ESPN this past week, and I told you that I kind of have been struggling with Cordy Glenn all along here. This is a tweener type guy. You know, some say he's a tackle, some say he's a guard at the next level. The Senior Bowl is what really stuck out with me as far as Cordy Glenn, because he looked okay at left tackle, but when he kicked inside left guard, I really didn't like what I saw. When I go back and look at some more film on him, you know, to me he seems like a right tackle, David, and right tackles just do not go in the first round, especially tweener types, in my opinion. So that's why I've been struggling with Cordy Glenn all this time. I'm not saying that he's going to definitely fall out of the first round, but I think he's a late first round to early second round pick, and you know, I kind of have him off my draft board right now for the Steelers in as far as a first round selection goes.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you, you know, I haven't talked to enough people to get a sense of it, but I had heard the opposite from Mike Pursuta of DVE, who was on with me on Monday on Savinron Sports, and he said from the personnel guys he spoke to around the NFL on Sunday night, they really liked him and thought he might go in front of DeCastro. So, you know, that's what makes the world go round. Different opinions about different things. We'll see where things shake out as more of this kind of tape is watched and some of this stuff is graded out. But those two guys certainly seem to be guys who could be on the Steelers' radar coming in at 24. Obviously, you know, one of the things that we talk about and the NFL personnel people talk about all the time is position value, and guard position value is very low on the list. Nose tackle, not the highest on the list either. Inside linebacker, much higher on the list. And there's a kid from Alabama, Dont'a Hightower, that seems to have caught everybody's attention.
Oh, absolutely, and he was on the radar, you know, heading into this week, and this is a kid that can do it all. He can play inside, he can play outside, he can stick his hand in the dirt. Good character kid, smart, can run the defense. Measured in at 6'2" and a quarter at the combine, 265 might be a little heavy. That, you know, might be something he wants to kind of get that weight down, probably another 6 or 7 pounds. But he said he wanted wanted to run under a 4.740. He did that at a 4.68. He did not lift. I was kind of looking forward to that, and he didn't run a lot of other stuff. But, you know, he was probably smart and got the 40 out of the way. That was probably his biggest concentration heading into this week, and he's going to do the other stuff, I'm sure, at his pro day. But this is a kid that could be very, very likely could be on the board when the Steelers pick it at 24. Could be the best player available that meets a need as well, too. And I mean, the big talk right now is after, you know, after this week at the combine, is it Dante Hightower? Is it Dontari Poe? If those two are sitting there, and to be honest with you. I think where I sit right now, I think Hightower offers you, you know, more in the future, you know, a more definite, a more of a three-down type guy, it looks like. I think he might be the guy if you had to pick between those two right now.
Yeah, and what about some of the other linebackers that are in there? There's the kid, I guess they want to call him Luke
Kuechly.
Kuechly, right.
Yeah, I had problems with that one, too.
Kuechly sounds like, looks like Kuechly, but Kuechly, so maybe that's why he changed the pronunciation. Kuechly is a kid out of BC. There's been some Zach Thomas comparisons. He had really good numbers as well, finished, I think, in the top three or four of all linebackers in all the drills. He is now projected to go somewhere maybe between 10 and 15.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big question on this heading into this week at the combine with Kuechly was what was his 40 time going to be? A lot of people thought he didn't play as fast on tape, and they were worried about what it was. So he came in at a 4.58, very respectable there. And now what teams are going to do? Are they going to go? They're going to go back and look at the film on him just to, you know, see what they might have missed or whatnot. But he's a very heady guy. Boy, he would look good in a Steelers uniform as well, too. But as you said, I don't think he makes it past probably past the Eagles, much less into the 20s or whatnot. And he did the full gamut of the workout there, 27-inch vertical. I mean, I'm sorry, 38-inch vertical. He did 27 reps on the bench, 10-3 long jump, a very nice 4.12 20 shuttle time. And the three cone on him was a very nice 6.92. That three cone, you know, shows you that these kids can change directions quickly and pick them up and put them down as well, too. So he answered a lot of questions, and he really helped himself this week at the combine.
He certainly did. A lot of these guys, as you talked about, solidifying their place. We talked about one guy who maybe didn't do quite as well. We haven't mentioned the receivers much. But it looks like there is some real different differentiation of opinion in terms of the receivers at the top of the draft. Justin Blackmon is a guy. You have the two kids. Justin Blackmon from Oklahoma State is certainly, in many people's minds, was the top guy, but came in maybe a tad smaller than people expected, around 6'1", I think 207 pounds. Certainly when I watched him play against Stanford, I thought he was bigger than that. And not extraordinary speed, but one of the scouts at the combine said, I expected to see a kind of Megatron light, and he is not that kind of guy in terms of his physical presence. Michael Floyd, it's not Michael Floyd. What is the kid from Notre Dame?
Yeah, Michael Floyd.
Michael Floyd. I think Michael Floyd maybe impressed people with his size and with his all-around athleticism. And then the guy, maybe the most surprising guy, is Kendall Wright from Baylor. He came in. He was generally perceived as, you know, definitely a guy who's at least third in the list of wide receivers, if you're talking about guys in this draft. And he didn't run very fast is basically the answer. I think he ran about a 4.6. I mean, you had some of the D-linemen, and you had various guys running faster than him. And the question is, you know, then guys want to talk about guys playing faster than that when they, you know, when they're actually playing, or they play slower than that. Kendall Wright's a guy, they say he plays much faster than that. But I found that, you know, very surprising to see, you know, him kind of run kind of that speed and maybe take himself out of the first round, as did maybe Mohamed Sanu, the kid from Rutgers, who I'm a big fan of. This is a guy who, if he, for whatever reason, went to the second round, you know, I know receiver is not a need position for the Steelers, depending on how things shake out. But I think whoever gets him kind of in the first 45 picks is going to get a very productive, a big guy really good hands, not as fast as you'd like in the sense of not a 4-5 guy, but the kid out of Rutgers, I'm a big fan of him.
Yeah, he, 4.67, 40, I think it was for him. Yep. But you got to look at kind of what these kids can do in an offense. He's definitely not going to be a guy that's going to stretch the field, in my opinion. He's more of a guy, a big possession receiver, that type thing, who can wiggle away, though, too. The guy, from what I understand, runs great routes. I haven't seen a lot of film on him. Let me tell you a guy that I keep coming back to, and I had him in my first mock draft after the Senior Bowl, is that Marvin McNutt kid out of Iowa. This guy just great possession slot type receiver. Really, in my opinion, had a great combine. He has good size to him, 6'2 and 3/4, 216. Let's see, 4.54 respectable 40 for a guy that size. A very nice 37-inch vertical there. A nice broad jump of 10.2. Good other times as far as the three cone and the shuttle and all like that goes. He is a guy fourth round, kind of where I got him pegged right now, third, fourth round. The Steelers most definitely could be in the market for a possession type receiver, to start grooming there. So, he's definitely a guy to look in on. I really would be surprised if the Steelers drafted a running back or a wide receiver before round four. I know some will disagree with that, but I just think some of the other needs, and based on best player available strategy that Kevin Colbert has shown over the years that he likes to use, I would be surprised as we sit here late in February.
Yeah, and, we're going to get a lot more information on these guys. Certainly, as you know, the Steelers get to bring in 30 guys. They obviously get to talk to the local schools. I think Pitt and West Virginia, I'm not sure if West Virginia and Penn State are included in that, but they're certainly very familiar with all the Pitt guys who are in the draft, which they're not many of, to be honest with you. The highest ranked local guy is Devon Still, the defensive tackle, who's, again, talked about being a guy who could go anywhere from 6 to 15. What else in terms of the running backs? Anything?
Well, hey, while you're on that, the Pitt kids, that Luke Nix, he's a guy pretty, I think, has caught the Steelers' eye. This is a guy that goes 6'5 and a quarter, 317, 5'4", 40 time. I don't think he lifted, but, he's another guy I think that could fit the guard type, that the Steelers are looking for.
The only thing I'll say about him is the guy was just not very productive in college. He wasn't a mauler. He wasn't healthy a lot of the time. But I wonder how, again, you're looking at ceiling and what you can get out of the guy. Always been a highly touted guy while at Pitt, but I'm not sure he ever lived up to kind of what they hoped to get out of him.
Yeah, and when you get down into these third and fourth round guys, I mean, that's the type that you get.
Sure, sure.
But there's a lot of value, I think, as far as guard and tackle go deeper in this draft. As we sit right now, I really don't think the Steelers are going to take an offensive lineman in the first round, just my gut feeling here late in February. So that means in rounds, two through four, I think that's when you're going to look for either a guard or a tackle. And look, I mean, let's face what the Steelers really need. Here, we keep saying guard. What they need is they need athletic linemen. So, if this means adding another athletic tackle, and perhaps I've been on board of kicking Willie Colon inside to right guard for quite a while now. If it means drafting an athletic right tackle in round two or round three, and kicking Colon in, and maybe trying to get another guard late in draft. I mean, let's face it, Doug Ligursky and Ramon Foster are going to be on the roster next year. I think Ligursky is a very, depending on what Todd Haley wants to do, I think Ligursky is serviceable for another year if he can stay healthy at the left guard position. Ramon Foster, I thought, was number one of the most consistent offensive linemen the Steelers had last year at right guard. And I think he's going to put up a hell of a battle to get kicked out of that right guard spot to start training camp. So, let's not zero right in on the guard position in particular, of course, unless a guy like DeCastro or somebody like that fell down to him there. I think what they need to do is they need to get more athletic on the offensive line, however you got to do that.
I agree with that. I think that's spot on. yeah, we'll see what happens. Dave, if you said – if you were going to roll – if you had a choice today of the guys we've spoken about, the two guards or tackles or however you want to classify, Glenn and DeCastro, Hightower and Poe, if you got to make that pick today for the Steelers at 24 and all four of those guys are on the board, who are you taking?
Wow, if DeCastro falls down there, I think this is a guy that's a 10-year guy.
He's Alan Faneca.
I can't put that tag on him yet, but he is a 10-year guy that can be a rock in there. Maybe an Alan Faneca type, hopefully, is what you hope for. But if DeCastro falls down there, I think he's the best interior lineman in the draft, and I don't think you bypass that because I think defensive tackle is – I think you can find some depth at defensive tackle. I think inside linebacker, a special guy like what is his daggum name? The kid from Nevada, the linebacker that I like, Johnson, James Michael Johnson, I like out of there. I think he's a kid that could be had kind of in middle rounds. I just don't think that you're real, real good, high-quality guards. You know, I just don't see it that deep. I think tackle's a little bit deeper of a position. So if you put me on the spot right now, I would say DeCastro if he's there.
I think I'd probably take Hightower first and Poe second and then go with one of the guards. I guess it's a little bit more of a need thing. I mean, if Casey Hampton's going to be back, and I assume the odds are that Ferrier is going to be back, I just think the Steelers are going to need to go inside linebacker. Now, obviously, one of the things is we've talked about – one of the things you and I haven't discussed but has been discussed in bigger picture is how the positions line up for the draft in terms of what is going to be available. And that people will generally tell you in this draft, tight end, very weak. Safety very weak, and you've got defensive line very strong, and then you know wide receiver pretty strong, and then you know most of the other positions grayed out kind of I guess normally. Is that generally your perception as well?
Yeah, the tight end class is weak, and I think we can all agree with that. I really. Maybe only one of those guys goes in the first round, I think. That might even be a stretch right now. I'm with you with the inside linebacker position, or linebacker as a whole. I think it's a pretty decent class. The weak, as you said, I think is safety, and it seems like it's been that way with safety for several years now.
And I got to think a big part of that is – If you're a guy who projects as an NFL safety, you could be playing anywhere and linebacker in college, or if you're really a great cover man, you're playing corner. I mean, I just got to think that there are not too many guys like Eric Berry who come out of college as a guy who's seen as a safety right away. Do you buy some of that?
I mean, I think it's the haves and the have-nots most definitely, and I don't see a lot of haves as far as safeties right now. I know the kid from Alabama, Mark Barron, but, he's not able to go at the combine this week. I think Barron might be the only guy safety-wise, shot at the first round there. So, Bill Parcells, I think, always put it best, and you keep coming back to this, when you're looking at draft in the first round, a lot of GMs and all like that really think you either want to – if you don't get a quarterback, don't have the need for a quarterback and can't get a franchise quarterback, then the next thing is to either protect the quarterback or sack the quarterback. So that's – that's why you constantly see the tackles go high, the quarterbacks go high, and the defensive ends or defensive tackles that can get after the quarterback go high. So that's why I think sometimes these interior linemen as Pat Kerwin pointed out, I think you're going to see these guys that are true interior linemen are going to drop a little bit down in the first round. Year in, year out, we see some of these guys that are touted as high interior linemen just kind of drop down a little bit. So, that's my viewpoint on it. Poe is an interior guy, so he's not really one that gets after the quarterback. Don't get me wrong. He is a physical. I mean, he really is living up to – I did a breakdown of how his stats face up to Haloti Ngata from the Ravens, and it's remarkable when you look at their measurables and all and what the knocks on both those guys are. But I think you're right now. As we sit here in February with what we know right now, DeCastro, Poe, Hightower, those are looking like, you know, possible the guys that the Steelers could have, you know, be making their choice from.
Okay, well, that you know, that covers a lot of that. We're seeing some of the DBs run. One of the more interesting guys in the overall picture is Janoris Jenkins, a kid who went to Florida, got kicked off the team. He's been arrested 3 times, once for a bar fight, 2 for marijuana usage. He's got 4 kids under the age of 3 with 3 different women. He just went through some of his work. He is an elite talent. The guy is clearly didn't have it together when he was in Florida. He sounded relatively mature when he was talking about the issues in front of the press. He was very forthcoming. You know, he said he's never going to touch weed again. Now, this is a guy who's 22 or 23 years old, whatever he is. Clearly, everybody wants to say their team is looking for character guys. And look, I'm certainly not expecting the Steelers to take this guy. But can you look at a guy, can you sit in a 15-minute interview, talk to this guy, and really think maybe, having dealt with hundreds and hundreds of young athletes, can you maybe get a perception that this guy's on the right track and he ends up going in the top 15 picks?
I think, as Kevin Colbert pointed out on Sirius this past week, he claims that you can do a lot in these 15-minute interviews to find out, you know, what a kid is or isn't, you know, if they're putting on a front and all like that. And look, Jenkins is talented without a doubt, but is he Steeler material? I wouldn't think so. I mean, I'll give him this, though. In a situation like he was in this past week, you might as well hit everything head on with the media like he did and get that all behind you, because you still got a couple months to go before the...
I think that's my point. He did as well as he could do with the information that, you know, with the background that he's dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, he hit it head on. But, you know, this guy, you know, Tigers don't change their stripes a lot of times.
Well, you know, but the kid's 22. I mean, I'm not willing to totally put him into the mold and say this is, you know, he's not Ocho Cinco or Santonio Holmes, or, you know, when a guy's 33, it's a little harder to do that.
Yeah, and even Kevin Colbert said in his interview that it takes a lot for them just to slam dunk a kid in a 15-minute interview. So, you know, if the kid's belligerent or whatnot and just, you know, if he's way off the chart, then, yay, get slam dunk. And we don't know if Jenkins sat down with the Steelers even. You know, they get 60 meetings with these players, so the odds are in favor that they probably did talk to him. But that being said, I doubt they slam dunk the guy. Now, is he going to be a guy that they bring up for one of their 30 interviews? I don't know. You know, they're definitely going to probably be at the pro day anyway to see Dante Hightower. So they'll definitely get he's with Alabama. He's the other Alabama school. I don't know why I'm thinking University of Alabama. But they'll be down there, I'm sure, about the same time that those pro days are going on with Jenkins in close proximity there. So I doubt that he's going to be a guy that they bring up for a pre-draft visit. And listen, I've said it before too, these pre-draft visits that the Steelers have, they're very, very telling. If you go back and look over the last couple of drafts of guys that come up and visit the Steelers, usually are very, very high on their draft board, as you would expect. And, you know, a lot of the success that I had in my mock draft last year, I pointed to the fact that, hey, you know, when you read in between the lines with what the Steelers were looking for based on along the lines with what they had in pre-draft visits, it made it a lot easier to dissect come that time. So don't take those pre-draft visits lightly.
Yeah, and let me throw out this in my conversation with Mike Pursuta yesterday. You know, one of the things I asked him about was Stevenson Sylvester and you know, how he's coming along and what his perception was, if he's the guy who can eventually, if not this year, next year, step in and, you know, be the guy in the middle playing alongside Lawrence Timmons. And he said, you know what, you know, when you're around Steeler camp and you talk to guys, and I certainly found this myself, is there was a big buzz about Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown in midseason before either guy had seen the field or before they had really even had much of an impact on special teams. And we saw the big impact that Curtis Brown had on special teams before he got hurt. And we saw Cortez Allen being used in the dime situation and even sometimes in nickel situations down the stretch. And as adamant as I was that the Steelers needed to go corner in the first round or certainly in the first two rounds, it looks like the Steelers have found two guys in the third and fourth rounds who are going to answer that problem. And I would say corner is now not a position of need. Now, we know the Steelers don't draft by need, or they generally like to take the best guy available on their board, regardless of need. But if these two guys really have performed as well as everybody seems to suggest in practice, and you've got Ike Taylor locked up, you've got Keenan Lewis, who finally made some big steps forward. You know, quarterback went from being a position that was a glaring weakness on this team to, I wouldn't say, you know, one of the strengths, but certainly not a position that I expect the Steelers to move on early in the draft.
I agree. And don't forget, too, don't rule out the possibility of William Gay coming back for one more season. If he does not get attention on the free agent market, they can sign him to a one-year qualifying contract pretty cheap and have him there as a safety valve as well, too. And I'm with you. You know, a lot of people saying, oh, I can't wait to see the defensive backs go at the combine. Hopefully the Steelers can find something in there. I would be, unless it's an extreme value on the board, say around round four, round five, I don't see them really drafting one up until at least round five, maybe, because I'm with you. I don't think it's as big of need as everybody thinks. Now, of course, we don't know what Curtis Brown actually is or isn't on defense because he got no defensive snaps last year. Cortez Allen, though, he looks real, real promising what they can do with a boundary-type corner on the outside there. So I'm with you. I don't think I would not be surprised to see them not draft a corner at all, but it depends on how many compensatory picks that they get. You could see a late round flyer on one there, and of course a couple of undrafted free agents following the draft, but I'm with you, it's not a big need.
All right, Dave, I think that that more or less wraps things up today. Anything that you want to throw out there? We had a question, I thought a good question. And again, thanks for all the notes and comments that we get in our email and on iTunes. You know, we're open to suggestions about how to do things, so please keep them coming. But there was a question, and I didn't get a chance to research this, but it was, I guess the Falcons don't have a first-round pick because they traded with Cleveland to jump up and get Julio Jones. If hypothetically, does that rule them out of signing Mike Wallace with the first-round tender?
I believe it does, my initial research. I meant to – I'm glad you brought this up because I forgot to go back and check the CBA on this. But I'm fairly certain that you have to have a first-round draft pick this year to sign him away. So
yeah, and I am too. I think that's exactly – you know, it obviously makes sense just intuitively, and we'll look at that. But
And Michael, if you're listening, I will research this for sure, and I'll send you an email back when I get a positive answer. Sometimes that language in the CBA is kind of hard to break through, especially somebody with a Southern Catholic school education like me. So,
Michael Carafa, yeah, thank you for that. Thanks for the email. And okay, Dave, anything else?
No, I think that's got it. I've got a great article. Chris DiMarino did a fantastic his view of the Steelers. Kind of pre-draft needs, pre-draft analysis, if you will. I posted last night. I invite everybody to swing by Steelers Depot and read that. A couple of good breakdowns on Don Terry Poe. After this combine's over today, we're going to be hard and heavy into this draft stuff, so I suggest everybody check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. Follow the show on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. A lot of great emails coming in lately, and you can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We're just hearing from everybody all over the place. It really lets us know how far of an outreach this show has, and we enjoy doing it too. So, you know, there is no off season for me and David. As you can clearly see, we do two of these a week, so get those questions in.
Thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 81.